Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Hello, listeners. I wanted to say thank you to all of you who are listening to this, especially to our patrons over on Patreon. Any kind of engagement from you, is whether it's downloading, liking, reviewing, or sharing the podcast, is massively helpful. It really helps to get the show up in various algorithms, and it really helps to get it spread to more people who might be interested in listening to it. I want to quickly say thank you, especially to Ralph Fenn, who recently became a patron over on Patreon. I really appreciate your support, and I hope that you are enjoying the content you now have access to.
Hi, I'm going to whisper some things to you now about Crunch chocolate bars, because apparently this whispering thing is a thing that makes you feel things. It's saying something crunchy is coming in the candy wrapper language. Imagine your tongue hiking up those crispy, rocky ridges. Now, drum roll, please.
Wow, that's good. Crunchy, munchy chocolate doesn't whisper.
Turn up the fun with Crunch.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What? I'm your host, Tom Kearns, and welcome to the Anglo-Saxon England podcast, episode 66, The Witcher. Well, after a period of illness, I'm back on track to discuss one of my favourite little kingdoms in Anglo-Saxon England, The Witcher. I admit part of my love for this little kingdom comes from its name. Witcher is just such an odd name that it can't help but be evocative. Add to that that one of the toponyms it survives in is the Witchwood in Oxfordshire, and the air of mystery that just clings to it is alluring, and personally, I want to know more based on that name alone. That being said, we always strive here to be grounded by sticking to the evidence, and the Witcher aren't going to be any different. The territory of the Witcher isn't known entirely for certain. The tribal hidage says that it comprised 7,000 hides, making it not insignificant in terms of size, but certainly nothing compared to the likes of, say, Mercia. In terms of location, the Witcher are supposed to have been located in the territory covered by the old Diocese of Worcester, the original title of whose occupants was Bishop of the Witcher. Thus, the land of the Witcher would have covered parts of Worcestershire, Gloucestershire, Warwickshire, Oxfordshire, and small parts of Herefordshire, Shropshire, Staffordshire, and northwest Wiltshire. The bulk of the kingdom, though, probably would have been located in Worcestershire, Warwickshire, and Gloucestershire. But what about the odd name, Witcher? Theories can be divided into two broad camps, and largely there isn't any certainty on either side. Firstly, there are those that claim that Witcher has an Old English origin, and secondly, there are those who argue that it has a Brittonic origin. Here, I'm going to look at both theories to try and let you know what the general contours of the thinking is on both sides. There are various Old English explanations that have been posited for the name Witcher. Its etymology is a hot source of debate. One theory is that it is an Old English name deriving from the noun whicher, meaning ark, chest or locker. The name may refer, it is suggested, to the appearance of the landscape in which the whicher lived, a great flat-bottomed valley bordered by the Cotswolds and the Malvern Hills. That all goes down towards the Bristol Channel. Richard Coates, though, points out that ark, chest or locker all denote a sense of being enclosed, and this environment, this landscape, hardly is particularly enclosed, since it is open out towards the sea. Others note that a lot of tribal names originate from personal names, but this seems unlikely for the whicher, which makes them unusual, since the personal name whicher is not attested in any Old English texts. Another proposal is that the name derives from the observation that the whicher or the Britons they encountered were weavers who made use of reeds. The name whicher may then derive from an Old English word for wicker. This is problematic, though, because wicker itself derives from an Old Norse word and no Old English equivalent has ever been identified. Lastly, it is proposed that whicher may have originally been an insult, meaning something like coward, comparable to the Old Norse hvikari. As with the wicker theory, though, no Old English equivalent of hvikari has ever been identified. So there are various possible Old English roots, some of them more grounded than others, but all of them are problematic. In contrast to this, given the location of the whicher in the far west of England, close to the border with Wales, it is entirely plausible that whicher derives not from Old English, but from later Brittonic, the last stage of the Britons' Celtic language, before it split into Old Welsh, Old Cornish and Old Breton. The main Brittonic theory comes from Richard Coates, who suggests that whicher derived from a name meaning very excellent. This name, he suggests, combined a word similar to the modern Welsh gwych, meaning excellent, with the intensifying prefix hi to get something like hiwich. Constructs like this do exist in modern Welsh, but hiwich is not one of them. Coates argues, though, that the name would be consistent with the tribal naming patterns we find elsewhere in Roman Britain, which tended to be bombastic. For example, the Catu Velauni, the battle excellent ones, or the Brigantes, the high ones. Coates' theory is undermined, though, not just by a lack of evidence for hiwich, but also by the fact that we know the name of the British tribe that occupied the Whicher's land. They were called the Dobuni, or perhaps the Boduni, it's not entirely clear, which would mean something like the victorious ones. It's not impossible that there was another tribe in the same area that became the Whicher, but there is no hard evidence for it. There is also one more theory about the etymology, which technically poses a Brittonic origin, but is highly controversial in a way that the others listed here are not. In 2008, the archaeologist Stephen Yates published The Tribe of Witches, The Religion of the Dobuni and the Whicher. In this book, he proposed that the Whicher were the direct descendants of the Dobuni, who retained cultural continuity with their Celtic pre-Christian ancestors. Specifically, Yates proposes a variety of deities local to the landscape in which the Whicher lived, including a goddess of a sacred cauldron, from which the Dobuni and Whicher took their name, and a goddess of the Cotswolds. Yates's theory is widely criticised on the grounds that much of his central claim, that there was a localised pagan culture in the region of the Dobuni and the Whicher, is not really falsifiable, particularly since many of the sacred sites he attributes to this culture have left no physical remains. It is certainly true that Yates's theory is not as extravagant as something like the White Goddess, but it nevertheless feels deeply antiquated, like the 19th century folklorists who saw in all rural festivals and art forms survivals of a pagan past, and who made the connections where none in fact existed. So the etymology of Whicher is unknown. On the whole, I think that it's more likely to be an Old English name, since there are many more possible Old English explanations than Brittonic ones. Regardless, though, the Whicher certainly would have been a mixed Anglo-Brittonic group, like all the others that settled in the west of England. Their ancestors, like those of the Mercians, probably came to the West Midlands along rivers, in this case most likely the Avon and the Severn, which flow through the Witcher's heartlands until they empty into the Bristol Channel. The gradual encroachment of Germanic burials and artefacts into Western England mark this slow movement inland from Eastern settlements. The region may still have been predominantly British in 577, though, when the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle says that Ceolwin of Gewissa fought a battle against the Britons of the area at Deorum and imported a short-lived West Saxon overlordship. By 603, though, the region was free of West Saxon influence, since it was at Augustine's Oak, on the border of Witcher and West Saxon territory, that Augustine of Canterbury invited the bishops of the Britons to a conference to request their aid in his mission. By this time, the region was seemingly largely still British. Penda may have pulled the Witcher into the sphere of Anglo-Saxon politics, since by 628 he was able to face the West Saxons at Cirencester. What Witcher looked like at this time is uncertain. Certainly by the mid-7th century, it seems that the nobility of the Witcher was fully Anglian. The first recorded ruler is Eanhera, who ruled with his brother Eanfrith. We only know about them, though, through Bede, who relates how Eanhera's daughter Eava married King Athelwale of Sussex. From Bede's account, he not only tells us that Eanhera and Eanfrith were kings of the Witcher, but also that they were Christians, since Eava had been baptised prior to her coming to Sussex. Who evangelised the Witcher is not known. Since Bede doesn't claim the Witcher as a fruit of Augustine's mission, it's possible that their conversion was effected by the Britons, either directly or through intermarriage. Besides Eava, Eanhera had three sons, Osric, Oswald and Oshera. The identity of their mother is unclear. It is sometimes claimed that she was Osthryth, the daughter of King Oswiu of Northumbria, who, in this interpretation, would have been married to Eanhera prior to her marriage to Ethelred of Mercia. It is because of this subsequent marriage it's suggested that Osric, Oswald and Oshera are referred to as nepotes in Ethelred's charters, nepotes being a Latin word denoting a nephew, a grandson or possibly a stepson. There is no hard evidence linking Eanhera and Osthryth, though, and this has become one of those things that is often said but not really demonstrated. It's entirely possible that Eanhera married an unnamed Mercian princess, or that Eanhera, Osthryth and Ethelred were related in some other way. It's really not clear. In addition to the three sons and Eava, Eanhera may also have had two further daughters, Edgeberg and Wethberg. Both of these women became nuns. Edgeberg has left the most apparent influence on history in the form of her correspondence with Boniface, which I'll just get to briefly. When, in the mid-7th century, Eanhera and Eanfrith were succeeded by their three princes, the Witcher already were held in some form of vassalage to Ethelred. In the charters issued by Osric and Oshera, they recognise Ethelred as their overlord. Osric especially was interested in founding monasteries, and he's remembered as the founder of both Bath Abbey and the community which became Gloucester Cathedral. He was buried in Gloucester after his death. Oswald too seems to have been interested mainly in the religious life, since he is probably the same Oswald who founded Pershore Abbey in the 690s. Oshera seemingly survived Osric for some time, and presumably, although it's entirely possible he was also very interested in the religious life, Oshera was more interested in the ordinary functioning of kingship. We don't know much else about him, though, except that he died in or around 716. It's in that year that his sister Edgeberg wrote a letter to Boniface and mentioned the death of her brother as being cruel and bitter. What this means is not clear. Whether he was murdered or sick or died in a war, we don't know. Oshera was succeeded by three brothers named Ethelherd, Athelward, and Athelrich. They are presumed to be his sons, but whether this is the case is hard to tell, since they are known exclusively from charters, where they tend to either witness land granted by the Mercian kings Ethelred and Coenred, or have their land grants confirmed by their Mercian overlords. These documents don't exactly give us very much biographical information about them. When these three brothers died, or how they died, is unknown. Indeed, nothing is known about their lives at all. They disappear from the record, and the Hwicha go dark until the reign of King Offa in Mercia. When Offa ruled, Hwicha again had three rulers who were seemingly also brothers. This is something of a trend. Eanbert, Uhtred, and Ealdred were their names. By the time they appear in the 750s, things had clearly changed quite substantially for the Hwicha. They were described in their charters as dukes, not kings, and Hwicha was demoted from a kingdom to a province of Mercia. Eanbert vanishes from charters after 759, while Uhtred and Ealdred held on a fair bit longer, disappearing in 779 and 778, respectively. From here on out, the, quote, kings of the Hwicha were no longer recognised as such, and they were instead reduced to ealdormen. How this happened exactly is not known, but it seems to have been a deliberate policy on the part of Offa to subject the smaller kingdoms around Mercia to the status of provinces in his quest to establish a Mercian empire. In many of these smaller kingdoms, this demotion was not permanent. In the case of the Hwicha, though, it very much was. That this is the case is confirmed by the career of Ealdorman Aethelmund. Aethelmund first appears in the charters of Uhtred as one of his thanes in 770. He then witnessed some of Offa's charters between 793 and 796. And finally, Egfrith granted him land, now styled as a princeps, in 796. In 802, following the death of the pro-Mercian king Beortric of Wessex and the rise of Egbert in that kingdom, Aethelmund took it upon himself to try and invade Wessex, but was met by the forces of Ealdorman Weohstan of Wiltshire near Kempsford. In the ensuing battle, both Aethelmund and Weohstan were killed, but the victory was decided to go to the West Saxons. Aethelmund was buried at Tewkesbury, and his son Aethelric succeeded him as Ealdorman in Hwicha. Aethelric continued to operate as usual, but he vanishes in the chaos of the end of the Mercian supremacy. Hwicha as a whole likewise disappears after Aethelric, only to be revived officially as an Ealdormandom much later in Anglo-Saxon history. It, of course, became part of Alfred's Kingdom of the Anglo-Saxons in the late 9th century, but instead as part of the Ealdormandom of Mercia under Aethelred, rather than as a kingdom or an Ealdormandom in its own right. Of course, this doesn't mean that the Hwicha themselves vanished. That seems incredibly unlikely, but it becomes almost impossible to say anything about them with confidence after 802. From their beginning, they were a mysterious people, and they remained so throughout their history. But to what extent their identities survived is unclear, and they were another of the small tribal kingdoms which emerged and then vanished in the great tide of early English history. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Anglo-Saxon England podcast. Once again, I've been your host, Tom Kearns, and I hope you'll join me again next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.